Coming up, we're talking about Luka falling asleep on defense, Victor Wembanyama's big week, and my Rookie of the Year rankings. We talked about a whole bunch of today's episode with Tom Haberstroh, who joins me every single Friday. We talked about my Rookie of the Year rankings. I know it's early, but it's just a check-in on the rookies. We talked about the Mavs somehow losing to the Jazz. A tough week for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Victor Wembanyama going off. LeBron James, triple-double stretch, three in a row, and a whole bunch else. All that's coming up with Tom Haberstroh. Bring him on in, Father John Misty. All right, Tom, so the Mavericks have now lost four consecutive games by one score. They lost 114 to 113 to the Suns, 122 to 120 to the Nuggets, 120 to 117 to the Warriors, and then on Thursday night, 115 to 113 to the Jazz. I thought this was going to be a night of boring basketball, Jazz tanking, they're capturing the flag, and the Mavericks would finally end their losing streak. But now the Mavericks are 5-7 on the season. The story after last night's game is the clip in the final 10 seconds with Luka falling asleep on defense. John Collins cuts to the rim. Jordan Clarkson's eyes lit up seeing how open Collins would be. And Luka was nowhere to be found. If you get caught sleeping like that with 10 seconds left in the game, Tom, something is wrong with your approach to the game.
Don't you love that Fenton cam, by the way? The one that we got Jordan Clarkson's eyes. Yeah. That was so cool, man.
Freaking
like,
out.
Get over there. Like, we got him. Luka fell asleep there, and that's really been the symptom of the entire season for them in clutch time. They have 130 defensive rating in clutch minutes. They've lost six games in clutch time this year, awful, which is the most in the NBA. And Kev, it is the fewest. This team had the fewest losses in clutch time last year. So it is a night and day, the difference between last year and this year. I mean, you can't put it on Klay. He didn't play much of the clutch time last night. Actually, on Thursday night, they played Quentin Grimes a lot of those minutes down the stretch. And they only put in Klay for the last 30 seconds of the game. It's not Najee Marshall. I think it's a lot of Luka sets the tone for this franchise. And so far this season, he has taken a big step back. His efficiency is down. His free throws are down. In that game on Thursday night, Kev, he had an average miles per hour defensively. We have these stats now. Average miles per hour defensively of 3.13. That is 10% slower than the next slowest guy in that game.
Wow.
And you saw that in that clip where he's just standing there and they know he doesn't want to move. He's not a guy who likes to move defensively or exert a lot of energy defensively. Same thing with James Harden, because they exert so much of that energy. They need to leave so much in the tank for all the stuff they do offensively. And Jordan Clarkson and Will Hardy and John Collins, they took advantage of it, and it's embarrassing.
What was that number you said? 3.1 miles per hour was his average speed?
3.13 miles per hour, which is 10% lower than the next lowest guy, which was at 3.4. So, like, ooh, we know this already in the numbers that guys like James Harden, LeBron, even Jokic, they don't expend a lot of energy defensively because they're so big and they're so smart that they can kind of play the gaps, play the angles. But 3.1 is, that's a snail's pace. That's like, I don't want to move. I don't want to say he's lazy. He doesn't look great out there. And the other thing I want to say, Kev, is, you know, this is a guy that lives on getting those foul calls. You know, offensively, his efficiency is way down. He's dropped 4 points off of his scoring average this season. And when his free throw rate is down 40%, his frequency is down by 40%, and his 2-point field goal percentage is down 70 percentage points, that tells me he's not getting the same whistle.
Yeah.
That tells me the guy is getting on the nerves of the referees. They're tired of his shit, and they're just like, we're not going to give you these same calls that we might have given you a couple years ago. And that is a real impediment to his, you know, his impact offensively. If he's not able to get those whistles and he's just another guy efficiency-wise, Luka Doncic is not the MVP candidate that he's been the last couple years.
he's definitely not an MVP candidate right now. Like you said, his efficiency is down. He's posting a career low 54.5 true shooting percentage, a career low 49.6 effective field goal percentage, not getting to the line, not scoring as efficiently from the field. And, you know, the complaining on defense, the bad body language, like that's all forgivable when he's playing at an elite offensive level. But right now it's just so sickening to watch. Like there were so many plays last night. You mentioned how slow he's moving on defense. It wasn't just that last viral play. Like first half, there were instances where John Collins drove by Maxi Kleber. Luke is in a position to offer quality help. Doesn't. He just stands underneath the rim, watches Collins go by, and then he complains to Kleber afterwards. There's a play. It was in the second half, I think it was, where Luka was the first line of defense on a pick and roll by George and Collins and offered no resistance, just watched, looked, and complained. Like, he spends more time reaching with his arms than moving his feet. Well, then there's the play middle of the fourth quarter. Collin Sexton just, I think there was a Clarkson ran by as if he was going to set a screen, but he didn't make contact on Luka. And Luka was probably in his head expecting a switch, but then Sexton drove left right by Luka. Luka didn't even move his feet. Didn't even move his feet at all. And so there's so many instances where he doesn't move, where he doesn't make an impact at the rim protecting as a help guy, and then he complains to his teammates. And you get Najee Marshall sometimes looking at Luka like, what are you doing? Luka looking at him like, what are you doing? It's like, Luka, this is on you, dude. And that the thing that's so frustrating to me is that you have this brilliant offensive player who right now is not playing brilliant at all. But when you play like this defensively, especially that final minute, let Clarkson blow by him earlier in the final minute, and then the final play where he just fell asleep with Collins. When you play like this late in games that are close, you don't care. You're not committed. And you're following this up after you've had the most embarrassing defensive performance for a superstar in the finals that I can remember in my lifetime. And then you follow up this season playing like this. I think it's an absolute joke. And I'm really concerned about Dallas right now, as not only as a team, they look like a one-hit wonder to make the finals. Luka looks like a guy that everybody says, oh, eventually he'll win an MVP. I'm not so sure about that, given the amount of star talent that there is in the NBA. Victor just scored 50 this week. Giannis scored 59. Jokic is on a tear. LeBron is still dominant right now, for that matter. Luka, you may never win an MVP, never mind a finals. And this season, you might not even make the playoffs with the way Dallas is playing and the way he's performing.
You can't lose to Utah. You can't. I know they didn't have
They're
Kyrie,
tanking.
But you know,
they did everything they could to lose. They want to lose.
And they lost Markkanen in the fourth quarter. He was out for, he busted his nose. He's gone. And so in down the stretch, they're relying on Jordan Clarkson to like create their offense. And he shook Luka Doncic out of his shoes. Like that pump fake, Luka bit on it that you mentioned it. And the only reason why it wasn't on Luka there is because Derek Lively saved it, blocked the shot, and just tipped it enough that John Collins could grab it and finish with a dunk. So, like, Luka, it's so hard to evaluate Luka without being like, dude, what if he just lost like 15 pounds? What if he got in great shape and was just so much better in late game situations or defensively? He could give just a little bit rather than nothing, right? And so, Kev, it feels like to me, Luka has to have a really disastrous year for, I think, a little bit of a wake-up call, you know, with his game shape or just his energy and his body language and the referees. It seems like the tide is turning on Luka Doncic right now.
Are we sure? Shouldn't the finals loss have been that? Like, you got smoked by Boston. You got destroyed. And you were horrible on defense. Shouldn't that have been enough? I mean, like, how is that not enough?
Maybe he's too young. You know, that come to Jesus moment for LeBron was in 2011, that epiphany when he got embarrassed by the Dallas Mavericks, but that was later in his career. Maybe Luka is just like so young at this point that he's like, you know what? I got another 10 years, another 10 swings at this. I'm not going to be sweating it too much here early in my career, but I hope the wake-up call happens, because dude, this guy, when he was a rookie, he was so athletic and dunking and like doing things that when you look back on Luka rookie year highlights, you're like, who is that kid? He aged like 10 years in 4 years, Ken.
I was talking with my guest, Adam Matez, on the show earlier this week, and I said to him, like, I'm like, I watched Luka, you know, when he played for Real Madrid when he was a teenager. And it's like, he was cutting to the rim, moving off ball. He was just a different player. Just a completely different player than he is now. And I really wish Luka would revive some of that stuff that he had when he was younger. But you're right. I think above all else, whether it's effort, whether it's fatigue, whether it's mindset, whatever it is, losing more weight, getting in prime shape, that is the ultimate key for him, for sure. That has to be.
It feels weird, right, KOC, to be this harsh on a dude who went 37-9-7 in the game, right? But I don't think our critiques are offensively. I think it's setting the tone, your energy defensively. This team is really struggling, and down the stretch, it was one of the most boneheaded plays you'll see. And we just came off of Eric Spoelstra having a total brain fart at the end of that game. Like, there are elite players, elite minds in the game that can have these kind of just snafus in the last moment. But for Luka, this stuff keeps on happening in the early season. And they are they're very vulnerable right now. And it's not because of Klay. I think the easy storyline is like, oh, they brought in Klay and he's, you know, a distraction, or they're trying to revive his career, too focused on that. You can't have that. Klay's fine. His usage rate is down. It's not like he's eating into these possessions for Luka. It's not like there's some ego trip for Klay. This, to me, this slow start from Dallas is all about Luka.
It's all about Luka. It's PJ Washington out as well. Najee Marshall, he's been good in every category except for shooting. He's shooting below 20% from three. That was a concern that I had prior to the season. I thought Kirk Henderson over at Mavs Moneyball, he does a great job covering the team. He wrote a great story after last night's game. And his last paragraph, he wrote about, you know, had the concerns with Jason Kidd, the concerns with the role players, the concerns with everybody up and down this roster. But most of all, as you said, Tom, it's Luka first and foremost. It's him getting back on track offensively and figuring out how to set a tone in a positive manner for this team, because the body language is so bad. There's so much complaining out there when he's making the mistake, pointing the finger at others. It's a lack of leadership, and I'm concerned about Dallas in that sense. But are you more concerned about the Minnesota Timberwolves after seeing them twice this week against the Portland Trailblazers? They lost to Miami earlier in the week without Jimmy Butler. They lost to the Blazers without Anfernee Simons and without DeAndre Ayton. Then they lost again to the Blazers without Simons, Ayton, and Robert Time Lord Williams. And Minnesota didn't lose three in a row once at all last season until the Western Conference Finals, when they fell down 0-3 to the Dallas Mavericks. Are you more concerned about Minnesota than you are Dallas?
More concerned about Dallas, just because I think it's harder to reverse the kind of mentality and the culture of Luka, and, you know, just all that conditioning, all the stuff, the defensively, all those worries. Minnesota just needs to take care of the ball. They need to find some sort of fire. This team got completely outplayed by the kids in Portland. And Donovan Klingon was awesome. Rob Williams III, what a difference he makes to any team that he's on. You know it as someone who's watched as much Boston Celtics ball as anybody. Rob Williams III is so good, so smart, defensively is a monster. And they got destroyed in that first game in his minutes. But I do think that this team, Minnesota, like, Anthony Edwards isn't that heliocentric guy that we thought he was on the verge of becoming last year in the playoffs, where you can just give him the ball and he can run the offense. They have four games this season with at least 20 turnovers. One of those games, 20 turnover games, was against Portland, where they were so careless with the ball. And I think a little bit of this is on Finchie, a little bit of this is on Anthony Edwards, but the entire team just doesn't feel like serious basketball. And I think when you look at Anthony Edwards, he fell in love with the three-point shot early in the season, and he was 0-for-9 in that last game. He's not as good as he was in the first five or so games of the season, but he's got to be better with the ball. The whole entire team has to be better with the ball. They are bottom five in turnover percentage this season, and they were one of the good teams in that category last year with Karl-Anthony Towns. They have to be better offensively than what they're showing.
Your point about Ant is a good one. And I think with him, you change your whole roster. You change the complexion of your team. Anthony Edwards is not at the level as a playmaker who makes his teammates better for this to work so quickly. Like, there's going to be an adjustment period, and I think that's exactly what we're seeing right now with Minnesota, that Ant needs to grow as a playmaker, and that might take years. It might not happen just this individual season, but Ant needs to grow as a creator, someone who makes his teammates better. And I still think the fit is a bit weird. I still am not so certain on Julius Randle in the starting lineup. I know the issues with even asking him to move to the bench, but there's just something feels really off with this offense. And I think that's in part Ant, that's in part Finch, it's in part just the nature of this collection of players. But at the same time, like, when we so often talk about the stars and the coach and the new pieces, like, this, like, where is Jaden McDaniels in this? Like, they pay him 5 years, $136 million, and he's averaging 9.5 points on 28% from three. No shot creation at all. And he's still a really good overall defender, but there's some inconsistencies there as well. So it's like they didn't get some of the development that they needed from the guy that they paid. And so I think for Minnesota, that is another factor that plays into this team underwhelming so far this season.
Dante DiVincenzo. I mean, he was a lot of people, their pick for sixth man of the year, and he has not been that guy. Shooting 34% from the floor, 30% from deep on high volume. That's a big reason why, yes, I think without Mike Conley in that game the other night against Portland, they just couldn't generate good offense. There's no world in which Anthony Edwards, Julius Randle, Dante DiVincenzo, Naz Reid should not score 100 points in a game. Like, that should not happen. And yes, Mike Conley is a great table setter and organizer, but he shouldn't be that big of a difference between an elite offense and one that just can't score.
I mean, Mike Conley's 50. You can't rely on him so much as a shot creator. And they played Dillingham in that game. What did you think about Dillingham? What were your impressions?
Yeah, like, I think there's going to be some times where he's going to work in his rookie season, but he's still super young. And I'm just in general very disappointed in the lack of oxygen given to him and Reed Sheppard, that backcourt that off the bench for Kentucky last season. Maybe we'll talk about Reed Sheppard later, but it just feels like it's not a waste of a pick with Rob Dillingham. I just don't know where he's going to crack minutes on this team unless someone gets hurt.
One of the other things I worry about with Minnesota is if Gobert is out for any stretch of time, like, this defense has no chance. Zero. Like, 105 defensive rating with Gobert on the floor this season, 114 with Gobert. But even then, with Gobert, Donovan Clingan completely outplayed him in those two games. Clingan was absolutely magnificent defensively. He had 8 blocks in the second game. He had 1 block against Naz Reid, where Naz Reid, I think it was a pick and roll, and Reid drove hard to the basket, and Clingan, who wasn't defending Naz Reid or even defending the action, just rotated over and just somehow had the coordination to swat him away. And next play, he blocked Dante DiVincenzo on a drive to the rim. And 2 plays after that, he blocked Julius Randle. I mean, oh my God. He gets minutes and he's having one of the best defensive performances as a rim protector that I can remember in the last year or two. It's like up there with Victor stuff that we saw last season, where it's like, yep, guys are just avoiding him.
17 points, 12 rebounds, 8 blocks. The only two rookies in the last 25 years to have those minimums in their first season in the league, Tim Duncan and Victor Wembanyama. That's pretty good company right there. You know, like, look, this guy is a wall in the paint. I love this matchup for him going against Rudy Gobert in his first 2 starts, because that to me is the type of impact he can have on an NBA defense. Like, he could be defensive player of the year if he wanted to. If he gets his conditioning up where he can play 30, 35 minutes a night, he's that guy. He has the same standing reach, 9'7" as Rudy Gobert, and he destroyed Rudy in those minutes. Like, that guy looked like the defensive player of the year compared to Rudy Gobert. Now, the other stat I want to throw at you about him: Donovan Clingan is one of 3 players in the NBA right now who, when he's on the floor, the opposing offense has 40 or fewer points in the paint per 100 possessions. The average in the NBA is about 50 points in the paint per 100 possessions, right? When he's on the floor, it's at 37 points allowed in the paint per 100 possessions. possessions. Now, that's a lot of the defensive schemes that Chauncey Billups has enabled this year, implemented, where they're packing the paint and making sure that they always have a guy at the nail in the gap to make sure you don't get that penetration into the paint. But a lot of it is Donovan Clingan. The only two other guys, the only two other bigs who can have the same sort of prevention of paint points per 100 possessions while they're on the floor is Defensive Player of the Year, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Victor Wembanyama. And they're still not as low as Donovan Clingan. Kling Kong is outstanding defensively, and he showed a lot more on the other end of the floor than he had all season. And man, he is impressive.
Yeah, he's impressive. As you said, he can make a Gobert like impact on defense. In my draft guide earlier this year, I had the comparisons as Rudy Gobert and Marc Gasol, because offensively, like, there's some playmaking that Clingan has. He's got some feel. He can potentially shoot. He's making some shots this year from the perimeter. Well, what are your impressions of Clingan on offense?
He's one of the top five guys in pick and roll finishes in the NBA right now. You know, again, Rudy Gobert is a rim runner. He does what you see Donovan Clingan do out there is Dan Hurley, UConn basketball. He plays so hard and he's never phased. Like, he got nailed in the hip and he could barely walk out there. And then he played another 10 minutes of the game against Minnesota and closed them out. Like, he is such a grinder, and he wants to get every rebound. He wants to get every loose ball. He's a guy who's willing to throw his body on the line to make sure he protects the rim. And offensively, those attributes of willing to have that vertical spacing, set a hard screen, and then roll right to the rim like Rudy Gobert does, and have the ability to finish. Scoot and Delano Banton are routinely finding him for lobs in ways that DeAndre Ayton, he might be a pick and pop guy at the mid-range and increasingly at the three-point line, but Donovan Clingan has that rim running ability, that vertical spacing that does so much for your offense, that I think Donovan Clingan offensively is much better already than I anticipated at age 20.
Later on, we're going to talk about more rookies with some rookie of the year rankings. And right now, I don't think Clingan has played enough to be a rookie of the year. But by the end of the year, this trajectory, he very well might win it. We'll talk more about rookies later. But coming up next, let's talk about some stuff from the week. All right, Tom, this week, Victor Wembanyama was absolutely unbelievable. He had 24 points, 16 rebounds with 7 blocks versus the Jazz, 34 points, 14 rebounds, 6 assists with 3 blocks against the Kings. And then he had his first 50 bomb, 50 points on 18 of 29 from the field, on 8 of 16 from 3-point range against the Wizards. He's hit 23 pointers in his last 3 games. Have you changed your mind about Victor's 3-point usage? It's like he listens to our podcast.
That's right. You're welcome, Spurs fans. We were hammering this guy last time about his, you know, settling for 3-pointers, not attacking the paint. And he almost went the other direction, which was, I'm going to live at the 3-point line here and bomb away from logo threes. Like, after our conversation, he goes out and just goes logo three, logo three, logo three. He has more 30-foot shots than everybody in the league except for LaMelo, Trae Young, and Peyton Pritchard. Those guys are point guards, right? Those guys are like leading their offense. And Victor Wembanyama, all 7'5", is spacing the floor like we've never seen a big man do it. Like, maybe Kristaps, maybe Brook Lopez have done these logo threes before where you're like, yo, that's nuts. He's doing it, and he's doing it in a way in the flow of the offense the last 3 games where you're just like, he's bending everything we know about basketball. Like, Steph Curry, we talked about it on The Big Number this week with Dan Devine about how he's, in my opinion, the best offensive player since Michael Jordan, Steph Curry, for how he warped everything offensively and what we know, what is a good shot, and his on-ball, off-ball power and his gravity. If Victor Wembanyama pulls up from 35 feet and he's going to hit him at a high rate, we just got to pack it up, right, Kev?
I mean, look, yes, we do. If he becomes a knockdown guy, a 7'4" version of Kevin Durant, you said something that, you know, has stuck out to me with him through this stretch, because one of the reasons why I think we were critical of it is because we wanted to see Victor ISO more, post up, face up, and have some more, you know, development in the areas of his game where he needed to improve from last season. And like, that's my only desire with Victor. It's like working on the things that he needs to work on. Like, I know people talk about he needs to be at the rim more. It's like, I don't need to see Victor catching lobs and cutting to the basket. We know he's elite at that already. But one of the things that he needed to get better at from last season is catch and shoot threes. Last season, he was way better off the dribble. He was 30% on 2.4 pull-up three-pointers per game. He was only 29% on 3.2 catch-and-shoot threes per game. His mechanics worked better off the dribble, not off the catch. Now, this season, during this three-game hot stretch, what we saw him do was to use the three-pointer off the catch. He had only 8 attempts off the dribble, made only 2 of them, but he was 18 for 29 on catch and shoot threes, and he was getting them all over the floor, pick and pops with Chris Paul, relocations, those spot ups from the logo, sometimes as a trail three in transition that you're talking about. He had one out of a dribble handoff with Stephon Castle. He had an off ball screen set for him by Chris Paul, and he hits a three off of that. It's like these creative actions getting Victor the ball off the catch. And this is different from last season, when he was off the dribble, where he was not a guy taking a lot of spot ups. And that's where I'm looking at this year, and I'm like, yep, okay, maybe that increased free throw percentage nearing 90% right now, maybe that's now translating to off the catch from 3-point range. Maybe now it's finally starting to click. Because one of the things a source told me during the summer, during the Olympics, someone said to me, Victor's shooting the hell out of the ball, like in practices. Like, he's, something's changed with his mechanics, because he wasn't shooting well for the French national team during the Olympics. He had a real cold stretch there, just like he had it at the beginning of the season with the Spurs. But then now maybe we're actually seeing the results of all that work he put in, from the free throw line, the improvement, and as a catch and shoot 3-point guy. And if that improves on top of everything else that we already know that he can do, like, these 50-point games are going to become more and more common.
Welcome to the NBA, Alex Sarr, right? Like, oh my God. Like, he put Alex Sarr in such pain in that game. They put Jonas back on him, Valanciunas, and it was not fair watching Jonas try to keep up with Victor Wembanyama 30 feet out from the basket. This is the thing that we keep talking about, right, Kev, is the game, the geometry of the game is so different now that Jonas Valanciunas trying to guard a 7'5" sharpshooter, if he has that jump shot, like you said, the catch and shoot and pump fakes, and Valanciunas has to go and close out, Wemby's at the rim. You know, like, that's the second level of developing that catch and shoot three game, is if you can pump fake because they're so terrified of you hitting that 30 footer, then it opens up this dribble drive game and he's slashing at the rim. Where in that same stretch, Kev, those three games where he went absolutely nova over, you know, at the 3-point arc, he made 20 of 37 from three. The shooting percentage is about 1.6 points per shot. And we did this the last episode, but I want to reinforce this. 1.6 points per 3-point shot on average for Victor Wembanyama. But he was also in that three-game stretch, 13 of 14 at the rim. So, like, I think it feeds into each other, right? If you're able to space that, like, chess, not checkers aspect of this, is you pump fake now and then you're blowing by and then you're going to have a dunk at the rim. If we can get Wemby playing off his 3-point threat and using that to draw multiple bodies or driving and kicking or finishing at the rim, it's going to be so hard, so much harder to guard that guy. And like, you can't stop him when he gets into the paint. So I think it does play off each other. But at the end of the day, dude's still shooting 34% from three. So even with this incredible 3-point shooting display over the last three games, I still need to see it long term. I still think it's, you know, it's wrong to assume that he should be more Kevin Durant than Giannis or trying to get into the paint more. Even with this inferno, he's still a below average 3-point shooter this season.
He is right now. I mean, we'll see how it sustains. Obviously, like, this, these numbers are completely unsustainable. But if he can level out as a 40% guy, I mean, good luck. Good luck to any team. There'll be no solution for him. And by the way, his it's incredibly small sample at this point, but his post up efficiency is up. His ISO scoring efficiency is up earlier so far this season. So we are seeing some improvements from Victor in those other categories. We got Spurs news this week as well. Greg Popovich, the team reported that he suffered a mild stroke and that's why he's been out, but he is expected to make a full recovery. Obviously, we send out our well wishes to Pop. Hopefully he's able to make a full recovery and return very, very soon. We talked about Victor, one of the young stars in the league. Let's talk about one of the old stars, LeBron James. He's had a hell of a week. Three straight triple doubles, 21 points, 13 assists, 12 rebounds, 19 points, 16 assists, 10 rebounds. And then his banger, his most recent game, 35 points, 14 assists, 12 rebounds. What's impressed me the most is, aside from LeBron continuing to put up these massive scoring performances and racking up assists, it's the effort level. He's setting a tone for his team, crashing the boards, rotating on defense. We talked earlier about Luka setting a negative tone. LeBron feels like he's doing everything in his power to set a positive tone for this Lakers team when he's a month away from turning 40 years old, Tom. How does this keep happening?
I don't know, man. This dude is unbelievable. I mean, he has seven triple doubles since turning 39 years old. Seven triple doubles since turning 39 last year. Okay, I'm going to give you a stat here that blew my mind. LeBron James, with seven triple doubles since turning 39 years old, is more triple doubles than Kawhi Leonard has had in his entire career. Wow. Allen Iverson has had in his entire career. Huh. Moses Malone's entire career. John Stockton, Derrick Rose, DeMar DeRozan, Tony Parker, Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell, Anthony Edwards, Manu Ginobili, combined.
Wow. Combined. Oh my God. Wow. Since turning 39 years old. Oh my God.
He has more triple doubles than Kawhi, Iverson, Stockton, Moses, D. Rose, DeRozan, Parker, Booker, Donovan, Ant, and Manu. They have six combined triple doubles in their careers. And LeBron has outdone them in just the past few months. I mean, insane productivity from LeBron. There is nobody ever going to be like that one. He is one of one. I don't know how else to put it other than some of these stats you just think are fake. Like, they feel like they're from NBA Centel.
Dude, insane. It's ridiculous. It really is. I mean, and he says, like, this week he said it twice. He's like, I'm not going to play till the wheels fall off. Maybe I have one more year left in me. Shams Charania has said that he expects LeBron maybe to play only one more year. And he's still playing at this level at this age. Like, I don't either.
I respect Shams' reporting and what he's hearing. Like, I'm not saying that that's wrong. I just don't believe it. Like, you can't walk away like this. You can't. And I still think there's another level of him where if he, you know, gets up with some of his buddies. I know he tried it with Melo, but I would love to see if, you know, he just has one more shot at winning a championship. And maybe, look, defensively, the Lakers are really struggling. They shouldn't give up this many points to a team, the Memphis Grizzlies B team, right? They had a really nice soft schedule last few games at home with teams where they're missing their star players. You know, Ja Morant's not playing. Scottie Barnes not playing for Toronto. It is a soft-ish schedule for the Lakers. They're fine offensively. I'm not worried about that. It's this team should not be like a bottom five defense with Anthony Davis on the team. And they got to figure that out. If they don't, they're going to miss the playoffs. But right now, with LeBron playing this way and racking up those triple-doubles and being a floor general offensively, and Dalton Connect, and all these things are fitting together nicely offensively, Kev, they have to be better defensively and they'll get back into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, they're 7-4 right now. Like you said, they're struggling defensively. You know, they got the Spurs on Friday night, New Orleans. They have a ton of missing guys on Saturday night. Then Utah Tuesday, Orlando next Thursday as well. So their schedule continues to be pretty light. overall until a really tough stretch coming up after that. But, you know, if they win these games that they should win, they'll continue to be in solid position. And this is our point. Like, Dallas loses to Utah on Thursday night. Minnesota loses two in a row to Portland. In the Western Conference, you can't be losing those games with how stacked the West is. At least the Lakers are taking care of business against some of these weaker opponents, and they need to continue to do that.
Yeah. You look at the standings right now on Friday morning. This is Minnesota is the 11th seed in the Western Conference. Dallas is the 12th seed. They're out of the play-in right now. That shouldn't happen. Not with the talent on these teams. It's an early start. New, you know, core members of that team. They're integrating, but same thing with the Warriors. They're integrating new players, and same thing with Phoenix. Same thing with Denver. They're integrating new players on their team and new looks, and they're still at the top of the West. So you can't use that as an excuse. They got to find their rhythm.
Absolutely, they have to. We got a little bit of news this week. D'Anthony Melton out indefinitely with a strained MCL in his left knee. And the Warriors, they've been tremendous this year. 9-2 on the season, the 2 seed in the Western Conference. Melton, he's been great. Defended Kyrie Irving, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Donovan Mitchell. And on the surface, I feel like this would be a big one for the Warriors considering his importance to their defense. But the Warriors have so much depth that I'm not too worried here for Golden State. Am I right not to be concerned about the Melton loss, Tom?
Yeah, last year he played half the season with Philly and was similar situation where he just could not get healthy. And I remember Owen Phillips, who does the great F5 Substack, he did this study where he looked at Basketball Reference hits on like how much traffic a player gets on their website on the Basketball Reference page versus their like player value metrics to see who is the most underrated player in the NBA based on how many clicks they get on their Basketball Reference page. The answer was D'Anthony Melton. And he is so underrated, but he just needs to figure out a way to stay on the floor to have that kind of impact that we know he can have on both ends of the floor. Really smart player, great defender, but they got guys. The Warriors are able, I think, to sustain and keep this going forward because, like you said, they have so many bodies there. Gary Payton II, Moses Moody. They've got Kyle Anderson. They've got Pajemski is out there. They're going to have guys on the wing that can pick up some of the slack there.
Mixing up your white guys.
Yeah. White Dante and white Brandon. I think when you look at the Warriors, they've got a lot of bodies that can fill that gap from Melton, but they're going to miss him. Yes. He's a really good, nice player for him. And another guy that when he comes to the Warriors and plays next to Steph, things are so much easier. And the thing about Steph is he's going to make things easier for everybody. And they're rolling right now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, they're going to miss him. I don't want to diminish his loss, but I just think you're going to have Moody play more. You're going to have Gary Payton get some more minutes. So I think they can get by without him, but you do need him back for the playoffs considering his importance. But even then, as you said, Tom, he has an injury history. He's had back issues in the past. Staying healthy is going to be the big concern for him. In the Eastern Conference, we got a little bit of news this week. Maybe it's non-news, depending on how you want to look at it. But Kristaps Porzingis nearing his return. He's been out on the practice floor more often. Chris Forsberg, the great reporter covering the Celtics for many years on NBC Sports Boston, had an observation about this. And he said, KP is lurking. What he's doing in warmups is very similar to what we saw during the playoffs, maybe even a step beyond that when he got in good enough shape to get out there against Dallas for the game. Forsberg said that on Celtics post up on NBC Sports Boston. And I think Forsberg is onto something there. You know, Celtics, you know, reporters are seeing KP out there more often. It seems like he's getting a little bit closer to a return. And that's big news for Boston. Teams are scoring a little bit more at the rim against them on drives to the basket, a little bit more efficiently. KP out there is somebody who can take a great team and make them even greater. I don't think Boston's going to rush him back, though, by any means.
I don't think so either. It also, what Forsberg is describing is, you know, you want him in better shape than he was in the finals. Like, that was really good, Kristaps Porzingis, but you want great healthy, fully healthy Kristaps Porzingis. You don't want to bring him back in the same condition. And I think Forsberg's right. He's like, judging by what you see in warmups and the shooting that he's done out on the floor, he looks like he's pretty damn close. Now, the thing I do want to mention here is how backloaded some of these schedules are in the Eastern Conference. If you're looking at Miami and Philly, they haven't played Boston yet, and they won't play Boston until December. And so if you're Eric Spoelstra or if you're Nick Nurse and looking at your schedule, I'm like, man, we didn't get to play Boston before Porzingis came back. You know, the first game that Boston faces Philly is on Christmas Day. And so that might be a target date. You know, all the while it was always, you know, December to December, December. If they want to wait until Christmas Day to bring him back, that's bad news for the 76ers, man. Like they have waited this long to play Boston just by the schedule gods. And Miami, too, their first game against Boston is in December as well. So that's something that's a little quirk in the schedule. But I know that executives over there are looking at, oh, when is Porzingis back? Oh, we can't sneak in a couple games against Boston in the first month of the season. That's too bad.
Absolutely. A reminder to listeners to please subscribe to the Kevin O'Connor Show, whether you're listening on Apple, Spotify, YouTube. Give us a thumbs up over there. It really does help us out. Okay, Tom, let's talk about my very, very extremely early, way too early, Rookie of the Year rankings. We talked about Donovan Clingan earlier in the show. Clingan, I don't think, has played enough minutes to be number one.
Boo.
On my early rookie rankings.
As a Connecticut native and a Blazers broadcaster, boo. Got to get him higher on the list.
I think he'll eventually be possibly number one. Right now, I have him number five. Number four, I have Ryan Dunn from the Phoenix Suns. We've talked about him a ton on the show so far this season, shooting nearly 40% from three, playing great defense for Phoenix. I have him fourth. Number three, I've got Bob Carrington from the Washington Wizards. He's leading all rookies in minutes, 9.9 points, 5.1 assists, only two turnovers per game, shooting 36% from three, 55% on mid-range pull-ups. And a couple of the things that have stood out to me with him so far this season is the improvement in categories that he needed to get better at from college. At the college level, he shot only 32% from three on dribble jumpers. He was a very mid-range heavy player. So far in the NBA, making 40% of dribble jumper threes, he seems to have successfully extended his range from the mid-range to three. In college, he shot only 14% of his shots at the rim. In the NBA, he has taken 25% of his shots at the rim. He's doing a better job of penetrating the paint as a passer and as a scorer as well. He's had some shots blocked, but he's at least getting there. That's encouraging. In college, he had 19 steals in 33 games. In the NBA, 13 steals in 10 games. So Bob Carrington, some of the concerns that people had are about him, rightfully so, after his lone year at Pittsburgh, seems to be improving pretty quickly so far for the Washington Wizards. And by the way, he's been their best rookie. He's been better than Alex Saar.
I had a chance to watch Bub and Jerry McCain and Filipowski at Cameron Indoor last year. There was Danny Ferry was there, Brad Stevens. There was like 18 executives that you saw watching Carrington and the rest of the guys at Pitt at Cameron Indoor. And it looks like Bub is the guy that, you know, on Pitt, I didn't know about his game, but he has this kind of like slender point guard ability, like reminds me a lot of Penny Hardaway. When I watched him for the first time, not even knowing too much about the draft, I was like, that's an NBA player over there. He didn't have a great shooting night in that game, but you could see the speed, the decision-making, the talent, the length. And then I found out that he was like 17. And I was like, what? This guy's so young. He just turned 19 a few months ago. And he's, I think he was the youngest guy in the class, if I'm not mistaken. He was among the youngest guys in the class, having just turned 19 years old. And he's already making a positive impact on a team that needs it, obviously, with Kaishan George and Alex Saar. They're playing the rookies a lot of minutes on that squad. It's not a huge surprise that Wemby had 50 points on him earlier this week.
Not at all.
It's tough, but I think the Wizards wanted this. Like, I think the Wizards wanted a full reset, and the fans are loving this reset, even though the expectations aren't there of trying to get into the playoffs or being one and done in the playoffs like they had been in this hamster wheel. I think what they're doing in Washington is really fun, and I think they have a plan going forward, which is refreshing for the fan base.
It's incredibly fun. I mean, it's last year the Wizards were, I thought, one of the worst teams to watch in the NBA. This year, I'm enjoying watching the Washington Wizards. They're fun because they have a direction. Play the young guys and let those young guys get better. And Bob Carrington, so far, he's been doing that. Number three, he's currently number three on my Rookie of the Year rankings. Number two, I have Zach Edey at the moment playing for the Memphis Grizzlies. He's shooting 75% at the rim. He's 4 of 7 from three, by the way. Looking good on his limited shots beyond the arc. He's an incredible screener offensively, a really good rebounder. And the concern with him prior to the season was, what is he going to be defensively? And I know Edey has had some moments defensively where he's not making the impact they would hope for. However, again, small sample sizes, but early season, the Grizzlies have a 100.9 defensive rating in the minutes that Jaren Jackson Jr. and Zach Edey are on the floor together. It's 102.7 in the minutes that Jaren Jackson Jr. is on the floor without Edey. So all that to say that I don't think the stats or the film, the eye test shows that Edey is negatively impacting the defense for Memphis when Jaren Jackson Jr. is out there. Now, when Edey's out there without Jaren Jackson Jr., the defensive rating is 120. So that shows Jaren Jackson Jr.'s importance. My point is that he's not hurting their defense when he's out there with those best Memphis lineups. So offensively, he's been terrific with his role. Defensively, I don't think he has hurt the team by any means at all so far.
For me, what I want to see from him is lowering that foul rate. You know, like this guy did not, I'm pretty sure he didn't foul out. He fouled out once, okay? Once in his college basketball career at Purdue. Once he picked up 5 fouls. So far this season, he's got 2 DQs fouling out at the NBA level early. We knew that like it would be an adjustment period, but that was kind of one of the things that I was a believer in Zach Edey, because I felt like he had a really good body control at Purdue and felt like he was able at his size not to just foul everybody. And when there were quick guards getting into the paint, he was able to defend without fouling. He didn't foul out in either of his last 2 seasons at Purdue, and already he's done it twice. So like for me, Zach Edey, his impact right now is much better than I think a lot of draft experts expected. I know you were very high on him. I was high on him at the Yahoo draft show this summer. It felt like I was like me, Lamar Hurd, my co-broadcaster over there at the Blazers. We were like, you know, if he figures out how to use his body and, you know, gets his conditioning at the same level where he's able to play at a high level and stay up, I think he can be a real legitimate center in the NBA. I think he's going to have a long career. It's just he has to work on his timing. And I think the more reps that he has, he will figure out how to stay out of foul trouble. But it is alarming right now that, you know, he's fouled out twice this year. And that's tough for a young guy to acclimate at the NBA at his age. He's older than most prospects coming in. But I think he's got the smarts and the athletic ability, and his growth over the last 4 years is to the point where I believe in him long-term, even if he is getting in a little bit of foul trouble right now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously he needs to make improvements there. The fouling, I mean, look, Purdue did not want him to foul. They're like, hey, avoid contesting shots. We do not want you in foul trouble because we are dead if you are in foul trouble or you are disqualified from a game because you foul out. So don't contest shots.
Yeah.
At Memphis, it's like, go wild, do your thing, try to block shots, try to make an impact around the rim. So with Edey, I have him second on my Rookie of the Year rankings. He's also second in Rookie of the Year odds on BetMGM. The favorite right now, also my number one, is Jared McCain, the 17th pick in the draft, 20-year-old point guard from the Philadelphia 76ers on the season. He's leading all rookies with 13.5 points per game. He's shooting 39% from three, has a 2.3 assist to 1 turnovers so far in the year. And ever since Maxey got sidelined by his hamstring injury, McCain has 18 points, 27 points, 23 points, and 34 points During this four-game stretch, he's averaging 25.5 points in 32.5 minutes per game, shooting 43% from three, 61% true shooting, four assists to two turnovers, 15 of 31 on 40, that's 48% on catch and shoot threes, 11 of 19, that's 58% on pull-up twos, only 5 for 21, 24% on dribble jumper threes. Eventually, that wow. mid-range percentage is going to extend to three. But Jared McCain scoring, he's been Philly's best playmaker. He's helping them at least look competent and without Maxey out there. And B did not look competent in his return earlier this week. But Jared McCain, man, super, super impressive to see how quickly this is translating to the NBA for him.
Kev, he's having the year we had hoped Reed Shepherd would have.
It is. It is. It really is, Tom. Like,
our son Reed just he hasn't been able to get on the floor, hasn't been as efficient as you think, but that dude Jared McCain is that guy. Like, that is the play that I was expecting right out of the gate from Reed Shepherd. And Jared McCain,
just not enough minutes for Reed, not enough opportunity. Like if Reed is not getting minutes, and the Rockets are good, they're a good team, they're 8-4, they're good, the minutes aren't there. McCain, opposite, you are getting the minutes.
Getting the minutes, and they need it. Like, they need every one of those catch and shoots. I mean, he is playing with such a confidence. He's getting into the lane, and his mid-range, his midi is really impressive. And Reed's been doing that a lot in summer league, especially. Like, that little Chris Paul, like, you know, pull back a little bit and take that little fadeaway midi. It's looking nice, and his jumper, his catch and shoot is so clean. Like, Kev, shooting mechanics, like, he is an NBA shooter, and I loved your comp. You know, in that draft guide, you had him as like a hybrid between Seth Curry and Steph Curry. And you see it, man. Like, that jumper is money, and it's the mechanics. Even if he wasn't shooting a high percentage, like, if he wasn't, I'd be like, no, long term, I have no concerns about him. Mechanically, he looks like he's going to be a great shooter at the NBA level. I mean, he was a 90 percentile catch and shoot guy at Duke last year. He was 93 percentile, according to Synergy Sports, in the pick and roll attack as the ball handler. So he already was performing at a high level at Duke. But at the NBA, of course, it's more point guard centric. It's more creator centric rather than, I think, at a more egalitarian offense in college ball. So they're giving him the ball and he's producing at a high level. I'm super impressed with efficiency and super impressed with how thick his thighs are. I know this is weird, but like, he's got a trunk on him. Like, that dude, Saquon Barkley in Philly, I thought he had big thighs, but then you look at Jared McCain, they got the thickest thighs in sports right there in the same city. I'm sorry, Kevin.
Thunder thighs.
I had to say it. That guy's got great thighs.
I mean, he does, and he uses them well. He's able to get into the paint. 2-foot finishing, as Jared McCain talked to me about on my podcast earlier this year when I interviewed him. He talked about modeling his game as a driver off of Jalen Brunson. 2-foot finishing at the basket. And that's something that he does a lot of, because he's not an above-the-rim guy. He's not an elite athlete, but he finds little crevices in the defense and uses 2-foot finishing in his thick thunder thighs to carve out
Kyrie Irving.
So much better than the Seth Curry to Steph Curry comparison. Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie Irving. You know, like, I love his game. And Daryl Morey and that organization found another gem late in the first round, just like with Tyrese Maxey. And it's just, they keep doing this. And if this guy continues to develop, they found another all-star caliber dude. And every draft has at least three all-stars. And Jared McCain is showing right now that he has the best chance of being that guy.
And I mean, he's scoring, the playmaking. I think he's the best passer on the Sixers. I don't think that's an exaggeration. I look forward to seeing how the dynamic looks when Maxey eventually returns as well. So I think my first team right now would be McCain, Edie, Carrington, Dunn, Klingon. Second team would be Reese Ishay, Jalen Wells over in Memphis, Misi in New Orleans, Dalton Connect, and Stephon Castle. They're probably even my second team right now. We're what, 10, 12 games into the season right now. I do this today because I just look forward to seeing how much this changes. It's going to change a lot, I'm sure. Are there any of the names that I mentioned that you think are very clearly going to move up? Because to me, Klingon's the obvious one, but that will move up the rankings as he gets more minutes for Portland, you hope. But is there anybody else that you're thinking is going to move up those Rookie of the Year rankings?
Stephon Castle. I love that. I agree. His D-cells, man. Mm-hmm. His D-cells is reminiscent of Anthony Edwards. Like, if there's one trait that I want young players to work on, is those D-cells that create so much space when you're attacking the basket. Anthony Edwards is elite. Luka Doncic is elite. There are guys that you look at, and they need those thunder thighs, that strength to stop and hit those breaks. Stephen Castle has that, where that, to me, is such a great predictor of your ability to score at an elite level, because that is about change of pace. That is a lot of basketball IQ and understanding how pace can be to your advantage. You don't always have to go a million miles an hour. And Castle, I love his game, both ends of the floor. I think he's going to skyrocket up the rankings by the end of the year.
You have any good weekend plans, Tom?
Sleep. Yeah, the Blazers are off for three straight nights. I don't know if we're going to get this again for the rest of the year. We had a back-to-back 10 p.m. Eastern start. I'm ready for some sleep here, Kev.
I'm going to get some sleep as well. I've been sick for 2 weeks with a cough. I don't know if you can tell on the podcast. Probably not, with our amazing production from John and the team removing some of my coughing. But finally got diagnosed with strep throat after two urgent care visits. So I'll be sleeping. I'm on antibiotics. It's helping a lot. So hopefully by next week I'll be all cleared up. So I will be sleeping as well, Tom.
Just there's no days off for you, Kev. No DMP rest for you, even when you get diagnosed with strep. I hats off to you, man.
Yeah, I'll be sleeping. I'll be listening to the new Linkin Park album that came out on Thursday night. I gave it my first listen last night, From Zero. Very good. Very good. Are you a Linkin Park guy at all, Tom?
I was born in 1986. Of course I was a Linkin Park guy in high school. That was like our basketball team, our football team. That's all we listened to, is Hybrid Theory. It was like that or... Get Rich or Die Trying. We got 50 Cent, Linkin Park, Clips, Eminem, just nonstop. And so Hybrid Theory was one of the albums of my childhood or my teenage years. And so I don't know what it's going to look like without the lead singer, but I'm curious to see. I mean, it was one of those things that, like, there's a study that was done by Spotify or someone that figured out that what you listen to in your teenage years has a disproportionate number of listens on your playlist. Like, what you listen to when you're 13 and 14 years old is just your comfort music. Like, that is your comfort food for your ears. And for me, I know it's weird to say, but like, Linkin Park brings me back to just like some great high school moments. And I think, you know what? I'm going to have to give this new album a listen to. You've got me sold, Kev.
Yeah, give it a try. I saw also Chester Bennington. It's the first album they've released since he died. Mm. And with Emily Armstrong as the lead singer. I saw Linkin Park play a show here in LA at the Forum. It was the first show of their little mini tour before they do their full tour next year. And they're awesome. They still kick ass live. The crowd was incredible. Like, they are still awesome. And Emily Armstrong, the album is great. It's really good. I think she's a perfect fit for what they're building moving forward. So I'm very excited to have Linkin Park back, because they still sound like Linkin Park. They still sound like Linkin Park. And you're right, Tom. Music from your childhood or your teen years, your formative years, often is what you continue to listen to. It's not often that you find a band that you love in your 20s and that they became one of those bands. Like, Mount Joy is one of those bands for me. Like, I discovered them in my 20s, and like at 28 years old, I found them. I'm like, oh, now they're a band I listen to all the time. That's a rarity that you find a band like that, I think, in your 20s and 30s. But Mount Joy, by the way, they just released releasing a Christmas album with Jason Kelsey, Philadelphia Eagles legend. They did a performance on Thursday night football game. It's like a redo of one of Mount Joy's fun songs called Astrovan. It's called Santa Drives an Astrovan. And it's a fun song.
Wait a minute. That was such a Mad Lib sentence you just said. Like, Mount Joy's playing a Christmas album with Jason Kelsey.
Jason Kelsey, yes.
What?
Jason Kelsey has like a band, like, that he releases a Christmas album.
I don't know this.
Year. Yeah.
I had no idea.
It's called, okay, I think they're called, now I'm on board. I think they're called the Philly Specials. It's like,
oh, that's good.
It's a Kelsey with two of his former teammates. And this year they're doing, I think, maybe just Astrovan, but a couple of other songs, maybe with Mountjoy. But yeah, so my weekend will be composed of listening to Linkin Park, gonna listen
Jason
to that.
Jason Kelsey.
And not afraid to admit, I'm a sucker for it, Tom. I'm gonna be watching Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul. Not a sucker.
Oh, 100%.
I'm a sucker 100%. For it. It's just fun. It's dumb fun. I can't wait. Did you see the Tyson clip that went viral this week where the little girl asks her, what kind of legacy do you want to have? And he's like, I don't believe in the word legacy. I'm going to die. We're nothing. You're dead. You're dust. My legacy is nothing. And she's like, thank you so much for sharing that. I've never had anybody respond like this before.
I'm going to go crawl into a corner and just go fetal position for a while now. Thanks, Mike.
It is one of the funniest things I have ever seen in my life.
I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to be worried. You know what? Maybe I'm not going to sleep. That fight's probably going to come on at like midnight Eastern probably.
Maybe. I don't know. They say the Netflix pay-per-view. I don't know. It's not pay-per-view. It's on Netflix. It's like 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. So I don't know. I don't know when they're exactly supposed to come on. But who do you have? Tyson or Paul?
I got Tyson.
Tyson is double the age, 58, 27 for Jake Paul.
Oh, it's going to be like Tyson's punch out, man. It's going to be done. I mean, one Tyson right is going to be, it's over. Oh my God. I'd be terrified. He hasn't fought since 2005, I want to say.
And he wasn't good at the end of his career. Well, he's still technically his career now. He wasn't good in the early 2000s. So, but I'm taking Tyson anyway. Partially because that's what I'm hoping for. But I don't know. Jake Paul's half his age.
I'm excited. Half his pumped. Age, man. I'm and pumped jacked. And jacked for that fight. Yeah, I had to get it in there. I slip it in one every episode of Pumped and Jacked for you.
Well, Tom, I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Get lots of sleep and listen to Linkin Park for sure. It's a good album.
I'm on it.
Thanks to Tom for joining as he does every Friday. Give The Big Number a listen as well. He does that every Thursday with Dan Devine over with Yahoo Sports as well. Check out The Finder as well. That's his great Substack. Thank you to John for producing. Thank you to you for giving us a listen. Please give us a 5-star rating wherever you're listening to the podcast and subscribe if you haven't done that already. Hope you have a great weekend.